I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, I have one more thing to say. And this isn't even necessarily an EA problem, but it's in regards to the College Football 26 conversation we were just having. After hours here on 96.5 The Fan, Logan Weber here with you alongside Jacob Mustard. We're here for another hour up until 9 o'clock tonight on 96.5 The Fan. I was talking earlier about College Football 26 because I played it for the first time and so far, not good. Not a good game. Pass blocking on play action is non-existent. Your secondary basically shouldn't even be there. And if you want to hit a juke or a spin move, guess what? You can't. Just doesn't work when you're playing on Heisman difficulty in this game. I like competition. I want it to be difficult, especially against good teams. But like I was saying earlier, when you're playing a 60 overall Missouri State team and you win by two and you're an 82, 83 overall team, that doesn't make any sense. I digress. The last thing I want to say is, like, my best friend and I, my best friend's name is Tucker. He lives in Maryville, Missouri, an area you and I are both very familiar with, Jacob, being Northwest people. And we want to play together. He's a giant Iowa fan, as am I. So every year, like when we were in college, we would make a dynasty in college in NCAA football 14, and we would play together, right? One of us would control the offense. One of us would control the defense. We would just pass the controller back and forth, and that's how we played. We try to do that now, despite the fact that we live in different locations. It's just we have to do it differently. So one of us has to make the dynasty and then invite the other person, because we play on PlayStation, through this thing called share play, which basically means the other person is playing the game with you via an online connection. But in this case, like with College Football 26, I made the dynasty, so I have the main controller, which means I'm the quarterback on offense. I call all the plays. I call all the plays on defense. I kick all the kicks. I punt all the punts, all the things. And he is playing through an online connection, which doesn't work. Like every other game we play, he ends up getting booted for a network connection issue. Because apparently playing on share play on PS5 in the year of our Lord 2025 is basically the same as using dial-up in 1996. He's like, dude, it looks like pixels. Like, it looks like I'm playing Madden 98 on my screen right now instead of College Football 26. That's not necessarily an EA issue. That's probably more of a PlayStation issue. But EA could very well fix that. Because EA has enabled crossplay and they've done all these other things. And you can play an online dynasty with somebody, but you can't control the same team. We should be able to have a situation where, like, I'm the head coach at Iowa, and then I invite him to the dynasty, and he can become the offensive coordinator at Iowa, and we can play the games together. Him on his internet, me on my internet, and we go. But that's not a thing for some reason. I understand there's always that nostalgia of being able to sit down and play with a buddy, but you got to think about, like, a big part of your base of people who play this video game were kids or young adults 10, 15, 20 years ago when college football was at the height of its power. Those people are adults now. They live in different locations, but they still want to play those games together with their friends. Can't do that. I'll move on. The Kansas City Chiefs are just 2 days away from beginning their 2025-26 season. With their first preseason game of the year against the Arizona Cardinals. And earlier today, head coach Andy Reid said that every quarterback, because the Chiefs currently have four on their roster, will play one quarter in Saturday's game against the Cardinals. Now, he didn't say that that was going to be the case for the other two preseason games, but the expectation for him and what he told the media today is that Mahomes will play the first quarter. And then you'll see Bailey Zappe play a quarter, Gardner Minshew will play a quarter, and Chris Oladukun will play a quarter. what that means for the other starters and main pieces, main cogs in the machine for the Chiefs is yet to be seen. But it sounds like we will at least get a quarter, or hopefully a quarter, of Patrick Mahomes on Saturday in a Kansas City Chiefs uniform. Another little interesting tidbit for those who are anxiously awaiting the Kansas City Chiefs documentary on ESPN Plus and Disney. A week from today, it will be dropping. It is a 6-part documentary, which will follow the Kansas City Chiefs and, you know, go through the history of the organization, dating back to their time in Dallas as the Texans and then the move to Kansas City, of course, covering, you know, Lamar Hunt and Clark Hunt and all the different things. The 6-part docuseries will premiere on August 14th. The production was a collaborative effort, ESPN, Disney Plus, Skydance, NFL Films, covering the 65 year of the history, the highest of highs, the lowest of lows, and of course will focus quite a bit on the last 7 years, including several hits back to this past season, where the Chiefs win a franchise record 15 games. They get all the way to the Super Bowl before ultimately falling short against the Philadelphia Eagles, which, as far as I know, that is quite literally the last episode. So that's going to be fun. The first episode, entitled Family Business, will cover the start of the 2024 season as the Chiefs look for the three-peat. The second episode covers, you know, family bonds, high highs, low lows of the organization. And yeah, and then the sixth episode, ultimately at the end, is The Pursuit, which is the Chiefs arriving in New Orleans for Super Bowl Sunday and ultimately falling just short. So, depending on how you want to watch this, there are a couple of different ways. Episode 1 and 2 will air next week, August 14th. The first episode will air at 8 o'clock. The second episode at 9 o'clock. The third episode airs August 19th at 8 p.m. Central. The second will air at 9 p.m. Central, and then the final two episodes will air August 20th, again, at 8 and 9 o'clock Central Time. I believe, however, there are a few other ways to watch it. If you have ESPN Plus or Disney Plus, you can watch all 6 episodes on August 14th. You have to use one of those two streaming services, though. If you don't, then you'll have to watch them live on ESPN. Again, episodes 1 and 2 on the 14th, 3 and 4 on the 19th, 5 and 6 on the 20th. But if you've got ESPN Plus or Disney Plus, you can binge those bad boys, all of them, on August 14th. So that's nice. Somebody in the text line's asking about, says, do you think they'll cover the Javon Belcher situation, the incident? I don't know. I really don't. In the description for episode 2, which is titled Don't Judge, it says, quote, guided by a resolve never to judge anyone else and a firm belief in second chances, legendary Chiefs coach Andy Reid has leaned on family bonds to sustain him through the highs of victory and the lows of unthinkable tragedy. So that sort of tells me that that's more of a family-related situation with Andy, possibly in episode 2. But again, I'm not entirely sure. Going down the list a little bit further, I'm not seeing anything that hints or makes mention potentially of that situation. But I don't know. I can't say for certain one way or the other if that will be covered at all in the grand scheme of this 6-part documentary that is scheduled to drop a week from today. Again, August 14th. All right, we'll go back to the phones here really quickly. We've got Brian in KC. What's going on, Brian?
Yes, sir. Love you. Love your show. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, doing great. Thanks. Yeah, I just wanted your take on the other day. I was listening to the pregame, and Vern was talking about he thought if the boys went 30-20, they would be a good shot at the wild card. Now they dropped two and one, so that, you know, the numbers already after Boston, but they got some good matchups coming up. But how do you feel? And have you heard anything about Tags? Is he coming back anytime? And Yaz has been amazing lately in right field. So what do we do when Tags comes back? I'm not sure about that. I love our team. I love the boys. The offense is great. The pitching, I know we're missing a couple, you know, throwers. But, I'll listen off the air.
Yeah, sounds good. Appreciate you calling in, Brian. I'll cover the first topic. You mentioned that earlier this week, Vern said if the Royals go 30-20, they stand a good shot. And this was before the series had started. So if you think about it, they were 56-56 before this series against the Sox. You go 30-20, you have an identical record to where you were at a season ago. Royals finish with a record of 86-76. That would be 164 games for those keeping track at home. 86-76, which would be literally the same record you had last season. I look at the standings right now. You know, the Yankees are 61-54. They're holding on to that third wild card spot. Second wild card spot is owned by the Mariners at 63-53. And then you've got the Red Sox at 64-52. Now, there's going to be a lot of infighting that goes on here over the last couple of months of the year between the Red Sox and the Yankees. So 86-76, yes, I believe it does put you into the conversation. I do not disagree at all with Vern on that sentiment. But with the way that the Red Sox have played here over the last few months, and especially in the last couple of weeks, right? Prior to that loss yesterday against the Royals, they'd won 7 in a row. The Mariners are playing really good baseball right now. This has the feel of a year where you're going to have to win 88 or 89 games to be a wild card team. And if you're talking about 30-20 before the series starts, you're now going to have to go 29-18 over the next 47 games in order to reach that, which I think would be incredibly difficult. On the subject of Jack Caglione, I have not heard anything lately on when Jack Caglione will be returning to Kansas City. There's an article here from MSN. This came out just 4 hours ago. It was actually written by Roto Baller, but it was picked up by MSN, that said he's been able to hit and throw, but he has not begun running in his rehab program yet. So that is not a great sign. Cags was put on the 10-day injured list back on July 27th, so theoretically, he's near the end of his IL stint. But if the guy hasn't done any running, leads me to believe he's going to be a little bit behind the curve and that they're going to have to extend that 10-day IL stint. Yeah, being able to hit and throw is great, but it's a hamstring injury. And if you're not running, if you haven't done any running with your rehab with a hamstring injury, I'm not uber confident that he's going to be able to come back. And, you know, the Royals are not in a position where they need to or should want to, or they don't have any reason to try and rush Jack Caglione. You acquired Frazier, you acquired Yaz, you acquired Grichuk, and those guys are doing the job right now. And while I do believe Jack Caglione has a massive ceiling in Major League Baseball, the performance that we've seen from him this year, I would rather see Frazier, Grichuk, Isbell, Yaz in the outfield right now for Kansas City. Frankly, I'd rather see John Rave. And he's not a world beater. But Cags was hitting 147. 22 hits in 150 ABs. No reason to rush Jack Caglione right now in this situation. Couldn't tell you when the guy's going to be back. But the fact that he hasn't done any running with his rehab yet leads me to believe we're not going to see him for another week or two. 913-586-7965 is our number. Don't turn that dial. Remember, coming up at 8:30, we're going to be talking Kansas City Chiefs. We'll talk training camp. We'll talk preseason. And so much more with Jordan Foote. He is a longtime writer, reporter for the Chiefs, as well as the Kansas City Royals. You're listening to After Hours. Logan Weber here with you, hosting tonight's program alongside Jacob Mustard. This is your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5 The Fan.
Hey, y'all. Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong, because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled-up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, I'm going off the deep end here for a minute. I got two things here before we get to Jordan Foote coming up at 8:30. The first thing I've got, so it's been in the news a lot. Like, I mean, I mentioned earlier in the show that I've been producing for Dana and Parks this week. Sam's been out on vacation, and they on their show were talking about the NFL banning smelling salts. Now, there's been further clarification that they're not banning them from the players necessarily. NFL teams can't provide smelling salts anymore. The players can now, I guess, still bring their own or start bringing their own if they want to. They're not banning the use of smelling salts. They're banning NFL teams from providing them to the players. Regardless, we were talking about it on the show, and everybody seems to be talking about it. During the break, I caught this video from First Things First on Fox Sports, which has, of course, Kansas City area media legend Nick Wright on the program. And they did smelling salts on the show today. And you watch like Nick Wright and Wilds and Brew do smelling salts on the air, and they're like wigging out. They had Greg Jennings on the program too. Of course, former NFL player. It's not his first rodeo with smelling salts. And he's like fired up. And the other three guys are like trying to avoid the hospital. Smelling salts are no joke, dude. And like Dana was asking me and Scott, because Scott played high school football back in the 80s and I played football in high school more recently than that, like, did you guys ever use smelling salts? And I'm like, I didn't. And I don't recall anybody like on my high school football team using them. Scott said he did because it was a bigger deal back in the 70s and 80s. And it seems like in like the last 4 or 5 years, it's kind of had this resurgence in a lot of ways. You ever seen anybody use smelling salts? Have you ever used smelling salts yourself there, Jacob?
Personally, no. I don't think we had a teammate use it, but there was on kind of a similar thing. Our coach provided like salt water to, there were some pouches that he provided to our notable players who got cramps during games.
Interesting. Yeah. So the NFL is trying to crack down on the smelling salts because it, you know, everybody's seen it in the movies, right? Any Given Sunday and Unnecessary Roughness and all those older football movies of the 80s and 90s and even the early 2000s, The Program and things like that, where, you know, guy's unconscious on the field, he's knocked out or whatever, presumably with a concussion or some sort of TBI. Somebody walks up with the smelling salts and the guy's all of a sudden awake and alert and ready to go back in. So they think that it can mask the signs of a concussion. So they're trying to limit the usage of it. And just watching those guys on TV today use it, it was hysterical to me. The other thing I've got, we were talking about Jack Caglione because we had a caller call in and ask about, you know, have they heard anything recently about, is Cag going to come back? What's the latest on his rehab? And the latest that we've got is that he hasn't even started running as a part of his rehab process. And I said that with the new trio in the outfield that they picked up with Grichik and Frazier and Yastrzemski, I don't think the Royals need to rush Jack Caglione, and that honestly, he wasn't hitting all that well when he was with the Major League roster. somebody in the text line points out, well, he still has more hits than MJ. So I went down a rabbit hole. And this is a stat that you're going to find funny, and it's also going to make your stomach hurt a little bit. So this season for the Kansas City Royals, MJ Melendez, in 65 plate appearances, amassed a .083 batting average. .083, which has led me in the past few weeks. We talk a lot about the Mendoza line in Major League Baseball. If a guy's hitting under 200, he's hitting below the Mendoza line. Well, I've never really heard a phrase for the 100 line, for a guy hitting below 100. And I believe it should now be dubbed the Melendoza line. Just my opinion. A few years ago, when I was working down in Springfield, it was towards the end of Hunter Dozier's tenure in Kansas City. If we all remember Hunter Dozier, he had one good year. The Royals gave him a bunch of money, and then he fell off a cliff. He was having a bad year. He's hitting like 170, and I renamed the Mendoza line the Mendozier line. So if you hear me at any point refer to a player hitting under 200 as hitting below the Mendozier line, or a player hitting under 100 as a player hitting below the Mendozer line, Melendoza line. That's in regards to Hunter Dozier and MJ Melendez. Hitting a .083. So somebody says he still has more hits than MJ. And I just casually made a joke back. I said Bartolo Colon has hits better than MJ. So that's not saying much. So then I go to his baseball reference page, Bartolo Colon. Again, this year, MJ Melendez is hitting .083. That's his batting average. Jacob, ask me what Bartolo Colon, a pitcher, 20-year pitcher in Major League Baseball, ask me what his career batting average was.
What do you think the greatest, funniest pitcher of all time is hitting?
.084. Bartolo Colon has a better career batting average than MJ Melendez does this season. 300 career at-bats, 299 to be specific. Bartolo Colon amassed 25 hits. In 60 at-bats this year, MJ Melendez had 5. A stat that I didn't know I needed to hear. And now that I've heard it, I'm not sure I needed to hear it still. It's a hilarious stat. But it makes my stomach turn. Somebody else just says, no MLB player in history, past or present, has a higher batting average with over 50 at-bats versus the Red Sox than MJ Melendez. Dude, it makes no sense. And like, honest to God, he was the Royals' best player in the ALDS against the Yankees. Somebody a couple weeks ago said that MJ Melendez needs more at bats. He just hasn't gotten an opportunity yet. To which I responded, the guy's got 1,600 plate appearances in Major League Baseball. He's had plenty of at bats. We've seen what we need to see at this point. And I think both parties should go their separate ways. Let MJ Melendez go somewhere else and see if he can have a resurgence in his career, because it's not working in Kansas City. And Kansas City needs to move on and look at options elsewhere, because it's just not, in my view, it's not going to happen. 913-586-7965 is our number. We've got 30 minutes of the program left, and we are going to spend that 30 with Jordan Foote, longtime writer and reporter, covering the Kansas City Chiefs and Royals at different points of his career. He'll be on with us to talk Chiefs, to talk training camp, to talk Saturday's preseason game against the Cardinals, and the 25-26 season as it stands right now. That's coming up next here on After Hours. Logan Weber alongside Jacob Mustard, 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
How We Met Your Mother is the How I Met Your Mother rewatch podcast with me, Josh Radner, and series co-creator Craig Thomas. Follow How We Met Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're going to get to our guest, and I'm excited to talk with him here in just a second. Jordan Foote's on with us. He is currently a writer covering the Kansas City Chiefs and the NFL for HeavySports.com. You can find him on Twitter. Yes, I know it's called X. I'll never call it that. At footnoted, F-O-O-T-E, noted. But I'm down a rabbit hole of MJ Melendez really quick, and I don't know why I did this to myself. Somebody in the text line said that no player in MLB history, past or present, with over 50 at-bats has a better batting average versus the Boston Red Sox. And this individual, 100% on the money. I'm looking at this guy's career splits by opponent. MJ Melendez, in his career, is hitting .393 with 8 home runs and 22 RBIs in 61 at-bats in his career against the Red Sox. Excuse me? So this guy is just the Red Sox menace, I guess? The problem with MJ Melendez in his career has been that he's hitting .197 in his career against the White Sox. He's hitting .174 in his career against the Guardians. And in his career against the Twins and the Tigers, he's hitting .173. So of the Royals' 4 most common opponents, their AL Central rivals, he's hitting under .200 against all 4 of them. Moving on. Maybe not. Jordan Foote's on the line with us right now. Jordan, you cover the Chiefs, but I know you're a Royals guy too. How does this stat make you feel? I'm going to share this with you. I shared it with Jacob just a little bit ago. MJ Melendez this season has a batting average of .83. Bartolo Colon has a career batting average of .84. I'm going to let you sit with that one for a second.
It's just insane. And I tuned in a little bit before the break and heard the Mendoza line references and spinoffs of that. And perfect. I was going to bring that up regardless of whether you did anyway. So we are absolutely in sync on that. If the Royals would play the Red Sox every single game for 162 and had Mike Yastrzemski in one corner of the outfield and MJ Melendez in the other corner of the outfield, or maybe one of them at DH, you throw a Bobby Witt Jr. in there, you've maybe cloned one of those first two guys, Royals would be a pretty good team. Now, the problem is they can't do that. And then they play every other team, any other series, and MJ Melendez at this point. And you made a really good call. It's not a sample size problem. This is kind of, I don't think he's an .083 player, and lifetime stats back that up. He is better than he has been this season, I think. But at a certain point, if you were so not even bad, just not developing behind the plate, that they tried to use your athletic profile to play in the outfield. The outfield experiment didn't work out too well. The power is more of an idea than a practicality and a reality at this point. And yes, he can take a walk every once in a while, but man, if it's not a strikeout problem, it's a power outage. If it's not a power outage, it's a strikeout problem. It's a walk problem. It's a quality of contact problem. It's a defense problem. It's sad because I think that like a player like Adalberto Mondesi, you see the talent there when said player goes on a heater and you're thinking, okay, if everything breaks right and things click for this team, and that's why fans were afraid for the Royals to potentially dangle MJ Melendez in trade talks, because we've seen it before with players of lesser caliber where they move on from Kansas City, Logan, and quote-unquote figure it out. And it wouldn't surprise me if MJ Melendez did turn in one quality season elsewhere if he gets a shot. But also, at the end of the day, he's a non-tender candidate, I think, given the lack of fit, lack of production. And this would have been the time for them to ride things out with him down the stretch. And then they acquired some corner outfield help. So sad pseudo-ending to a underwhelming tenure. And Bartolo Colon, that piece I completely neglected. He's awesome. I love Bartolo, one of the best personalities ever. And I think that's more hilarious than anything else.
All right. So I want to deviate away from this MJ Melendez conversation that I'm still not entirely clear where it started, and talk a little Kansas City Chiefs, because we're, you know, less than 48 hours away from the first preseason game against the Arizona Cardinals. First thing Andy Reid says today in his post-practice press conference, that every quarterback is going to play a quarter. Pat's going to get a quarter, Gardner Minshew a quarter, Bailey Zappe, and then finally Chris Oladukun. Do you buy into that completely? Do we really need to expect to see Patrick Mahomes for the entirety of the first quarter, or does this feel more like a one or two drive situation for Pat and then move on and let the other guys get their reps?
Brother, if they go down the field and score a touchdown, I don't think you're seeing Patrick Mahomes a second time. Like, that's where I'm at. If they go three and out, sure, you're going to see him again. But I truly don't believe it. And I'm not in the business of calling people liars, and I'm definitely in the business of leaving interpretations open and possibilities open. I'm just not a very finite, definitive person when it comes to sports, especially the NFL, that's so challenging and difficult and intricate to sort out. But we know this. Every single year, Andy Reid does this. And Patrick Mahomes is only getting older. He's only getting more experienced. He's only needing the preseason less, not more. It isn't going to happen. He is not going to play the first quarter. I would be absolutely shocked if it did, unless that first opening drive took that long, or he really, really, really wanted a second one. Like, there's an overwhelming probability that Mahomes is going to get one drive if it goes well, two drives if it doesn't go well. Then you're going to get Gardner Minshew. Then you're going to get a Bailey Zappe. And then Chris O will do Chris O things. And frankly, I'm kind of excited to see that because he is a enjoyable preseason quarterback to watch. And that'll be interesting to see how he does against the Cardinals.
So changing to, you know, some of the other guys that we could or maybe couldn't see on Saturday against the Arizona Cardinals, you know, one bit of news that came out of camp today was that cornerback Christian Fulton, who the Chiefs signed in free agency, was available for his first practice of the training camp season. But on top of that, you've got guys that didn't practice. Hollywood Brown didn't practice again today. Rashee Rice did not practice today. Neither did linebacker Cam Jones. So what is a realistic expectation for other starters for this Chiefs team that we may see, and maybe some other guys that we won't be available, that won't be available on Saturday?
Yeah, I think that Fulton, expecting him to be available for the game is maybe realistic, and perhaps he gets a few snaps on an opening possession. And again, if they got a three and out on defense, I think that'd be deemed a success for him, and it'd probably be it. I just also find it hard to believe that he came back for what was really a light practice. Yes, it lasted quite a while because Andy Reid camps are grueling and they're given a certain amount of minutes, and darn it, Andy Reid is going to maximize that time. But coming fresh off of PUP on Thursday and then being ready to go for Saturday just doesn't seem incredibly realistic. And I'd almost extend to maybe a Juwan Taylor. Drew Tranquil was banged up and then got back to practice. Rashard Smith had a finger injury that I believe is minor from all the information I have. I don't think that it's going to hold him back, so you'll still see plenty of him. But the starters, you have specific people, and really the offensive line is a perfect example. Josh Simmons should be getting plenty of reps. Kingsley should be getting plenty of reps. That duo is going to need time together to play. Creed Humphrey, Trey Smith, they don't need much time. They should be on the Patrick Mahomes plan. Travis Kelce should be on the Patrick Mahomes plan. And really, some of those guys you could even swap out in drive. If Xavier Worthy looks really good after a few plays, you could call it for him. If Travis Kelce looks really good after a few, call it for him. Like, I'm not trying to say the game won't be interesting, because I think it absolutely will be, and there will be plenty of roster battles and unsung heroes and all of that to keep an eye on. But in terms of starters, maybe the secondary with like a Jaden Hicks, some Brian Cook, guys like that perhaps could get more run. But your household names for Chiefs Kingdom, I wouldn't really expect, in addition to the previously injured guys getting a ton of snaps.
Talking about the offensive line there for a second, you know, the hype surrounding Josh Simmons has grown to astronomical levels. I mean, earlier this week, you heard Mitchell Schwartz on The Drive with Carrington compare him to Trent Williams, who is possibly the best left tackle of the past generation. How bought in are you to Josh Simmons as that guy who can be a franchise left tackle for this Chiefs team over the course of the next decade, based off what you've seen and what you've heard so far this offseason?
I'm going to come off as a massive hypocrite because I am very, very, very anti-hyping up players too much. I think that it does them a disservice. And Isaiah Pacheco is a prime example. And I remember that summer, I was like, okay, people, let's kind of let's pump the brakes a bit on this Isaiah Pacheco kid. He's a seventh round pick. Let's let him earn that hype instead of forcing him into a role and putting him on a pedestal that he shouldn't be on. And then everyone said, oh, you're a hater. You think he's going to suck? No, that's not the point. The point is fans and even media as well, and that's nationally, locally, and alike, will put these players at that tip-top pedestal and set them up for unfair expectations. And Josh Simmons, all of that said, Hall of Fame jokes and all, I truly am buying into the hype. I think he's going to be an awesome player. I totally buy that he was a top half of the opening round pick. Had he not suffered that patellar tendon injury, he's looked awesome at camp. He's gotten plenty of reps at training camp on that left side. It's an unchallenged job for him. Everything short of Andy Reid saying, hey, he's the week one starter. And I think the Chiefs learned from their mistakes with Kingsley, where Josh Simmons probably doesn't need the reps like Kingsley does, but they didn't give him much of a runway. Simmons should be getting that. I think he's earned it. And health permitting, I buy the hype. I think that this could be, and I think Kent Swanson of KC Sports Network has said it. Plenty of people have said it on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it these days. This could be, there is a non-zero chance that, Logan, this is the final left tackle that Patrick Mahomes ever has. I don't know if I'd bet on that necessarily, but that is absolutely on the table. That's how good I think Simmons can be.
That would be a welcome sign for Kansas City Chiefs fans. I want to continue this conversation about Josh Simmons. So, Jordan, I'm going to hold you over here. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to dive more into Josh Simmons as well as Saturday's preseason game and really what the expectations are for the Chiefs this year, because there's a lot of folks out there, especially in the national media, who don't believe the Chiefs are going to win the AFC West this season. What's new? After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan, Logan Weber alongside producer Jacob Mustard. More from Jordan Foote coming up next here on 96.5 The Fan. Back one more time. Final segment of After Hours here on this Thursday. Logan Weber joined by producer Jacob Mustard. And on the line with us is Jordan Foote. He is a writer covering the Kansas City Chiefs and the NFL. You can find him on Twitter at FootNoted. And Jordan, we were talking about Josh Simmons and the expectations and the hype surrounding him based off what's happened this offseason. I want to ask you, you mentioned the Kingsley Suamataia situation last year. I hate to speak in a negative hypothetical sense, but let's, for the sake of the argument, say first 3 weeks of the regular season, Josh Simmons finds himself in a very similar predicament to where Kingsley was a season ago, where he struggles through the first two or three starts of the year, and the Chiefs have a decision to make. You know, is it within the realm of possibility that the Chiefs do something similar and pull Josh Simmons out of the starting lineup and insert, say, a Jalen Moore and risk the possibility of curtailing somebody's development, somebody that has such hype around them, like a guy in Josh Simmons?
Yeah, it's an interesting kind of duality, and I think multiple things can be and probably are true in this hypothetical, that all offseason last year, everyone said, oh man, Kingsley's going to need some time. Kingsley won't be perfect right out of the gate. It's going to take, you know, maybe a year, maybe 2 years for him to be a completely viable NFL left tackle. And then after a few preseason snaps and an okay ho-hum week one and a baptism by Trey Hendrickson, it was off with his head. It was time to go to the bench, all that stuff. And I think the Chiefs have learned, and really the short leash with him also applied to their experiment with Wanya Morris the year before. Granted, Morris didn't play a ton all year and was also injured late in the season. So slightly different situation, but they're learning simultaneously. If the player isn't ready, they are not in the business of waiting for them on the fly. And now they have a better option than they did at any point last season in Jalen Moore, who, while I'm not particularly high on him as a viable starter long-term, if he's your highest paid swing tackle in the NFL, I think he could be the best maybe swing tackle in the NFL. And there's ramifications with the Juwan Taylor contract, with him maybe getting out of it next year, the Chiefs moving on from him. But back to Simmons, if he does struggle out of the gate, and the Chiefs do have, they're going to learn early with the pass rushing teams that they face. It's not going to be easy for him. It's an interesting duality again, because he is a better prospect. I think miles better. His reps were more applicable to the NFL than Kingsley's were. Kingsley didn't play a ton of true NFL level pass sets when he was at BYU. So I was very intrigued by the short leash there. So, yes, the precedent is there. Yes, they have a better backup plan, but I'm inclined, unless he just looks absolutely unplayable, which I just don't think is going to happen, that they're going to let the rookie grow through it. And maybe if it extends to, let's say, 6 weeks or even the bye, that if Jalen Moore is healthy, then maybe they make the swap after that.
Got about a minute left here, Jordan. Final question I've got for you. Earlier today, Colin Cowherd, like a lot of national media members, are saying that the Chiefs' time as the kings of the AFC West is dead, that the Los Angeles Chargers are going to win the division. Mere hours later, Rashawn Slater out for the season with the ruptured patellar tendon. How concerned should Chiefs fans be about another team within the AFC West possibly contending with them for the crown atop the division?
Good grief. I thought you were going to ask about the AFC, and that would have been a totally different answer. They shouldn't be worried at all. Like, the Broncos maybe will win 9-10 games and be competitive. The Raiders will be better. The Chargers, even with the Slater injury notwithstanding, will be good. But the Chiefs are going to sleepwalk to 11-12 wins, maybe even on the higher end. And I think that the AFC West is not going to come to an end regarding that streak in 2025.
Exactly what I wanted to hear. That is Jordan Foote. He is a writer reporter covering the Chiefs and the NFL, joining us, telling us not to worry. The AFC West is still well in control with the Kansas City Chiefs. That'll do it for tonight's program. For my producer, Jacob Mustard, I'm Logan Weber. Thank you guys for joining us. Thanks for getting involved on the text line. As always, make sure you tune in tomorrow night. Royals baseball back in action against the Twins here on 96.5 The Fan.
The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.